All right. Welcome to this episode of Agile for Agilists. I am Brad Nelson. With me is Drew Podwall. And today we're going to talk about Agile purism. So Drew, what does Agile purism mean to you?
It is the worst thing you could ever call me. It is the thing that strips me of all of my power and ability to coach and brings me to my knees. That's what I think about when it comes to being called a purist.
That's funny. Yeah, it definitely has a negative connotation now. But when I started, there was almost a pride in it, right? Where you go into these organizations and you're working with these other coaches and they're telling you how to do things. And you're like, this doesn't make sense. This is dumb. Why am I doing this? So, you know, you get on Google and you're clicking away and you look up like, well, what is, you know, the Agile Manifesto and what were they doing when this started? And you can find ways to justify, to be defiant to these other ways by being like, that's not what Agile says.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point, right? Because like there, to be a purist in the other connotation, right? Is one who knows the Scrum Guide, right? Who knows the principles and values of the Agile Manifesto. You know, and is able to exude those qualities and help coach a team, right? But the negative connotation of being called a purist, right? You know, we've talked a little bit about this, like the two sides of purism that I see as negative is like when your client calls you a purist. You're being too much of a purist right now, Brad. you know, my teams can't do that. You know, that to me is negative. Or you know, when you're on a coaching call or a webinar or a lean coffee event, you know, for, you know, just a learning opportunity or whatnot, and one person decides they don't like this methodology, and then another person jumps on that, and another person jumps on that, and my methodology is the right methodology, and your methodology is the wrong methodology. That's the other side, I feel like, of being called the purist, that is, or purism within our community, that is negative and hurts us. So which one do you want to start off talking about first? Which one speaks to you the most?
I feel like we should start with, let's start with the methodology and the framework one from other Agilists, right?
From other Agilists. You know, so where have you experienced that?
Where haven't I? you know, I think it's really common, and it's even more so in our circle, I feel like, than other circles. You know, humans have this like tribalism where as much as we want to be a part of something, we also want that something to be special and different. And so there's just as much effort at like being the vanguard and keeping out people who aren't a part of your tribe. And I definitely feel like Agile suffers from that a little bit. When we look at, you know, some of the interactions I've had, it's, you know, oh, well, that's not what the Scrum Guide says, right? Like that's probably the most common one I hear.
Well, okay. So I agree with that statement a little bit, right? Like I think it's important, right, to remember what the Scrum Guide says, right? But I also think it's important to remember that, you know, every person, every, you know, team, every organization's journey is going to be unique to them, right? There's no one size fits all, you know, way to go through the forest. There's lots of ways to go through the forest. There's lots of starting points to, you know, lots of trailheads to start at, you know, and there's lots of sights to see along the way. Did that bell just go off loud enough for you to hear it on my side or is it just in my ears?
Just your ears.
Okay. That's another fast cycle of failure. I've realized that I need to turn off and put myself into do not disturb mode. so let's see. Sorry about that, guys. I disrupted it. But you know, there's lots of pathways through the forest. I think it's important that we look at the Scrum Guide and that we look at the manifesto as the foundation, right? For, compare that to the outcomes that we want to achieve and compare that to the impediments that we're currently experiencing. So I don't specifically think that for somebody to say that's not what the Scrum Guide says is negative. It's the connotation behind it and the context that I think might make it negative. Do you agree with that? Or
So that's something I'm really torn on. I would say your justification for doing something should never be this guide or this article or this piece of paper says this is what you have to do, so we do it. Right? The failure that I see is right when Scrum becomes the process and tools over right people and interactions.
Yes, no, absolutely. That I agree with. Okay. So I think, yeah, that makes a lot more sense. I thought you were coming at it from a different angle. yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
And I've had the fortunate opportunity to work with a lot of Scrum trainers. And the thing that I appreciate about a lot of them is they'll say, you know, here's Scrum in its entirety. You can pick pieces out of it. There's benefits to different practices and pieces of the guide. Just don't call it Scrum.
I could see that as well. I think, again, I fall on both sides of the fence there, you know. I was just thinking of something silly, but yeah. I grew up, never mind. I'm not going to tell the story. Wow. That's a first for me. I just showed good judgment, but, you know, I think that like, that's the other side of the coin too, is that like, for instance, the idea of, do we call it a ceremony? Do we call it an agile event? Do we call it a meeting? Mm-hmm. You know, words have a lot of meaning, words had a lot of connotation, and, but along those same lines though, right? Like if we're not running the agile event, like let's say, the daily stand-up, right? Let's say that your team is not running the daily stand-up in the way that the Scrum Guide says to run the daily stand-up, mm-hmm. right? Would you tell them that they're not allowed to call it a daily stand-up?
Well, so if I was being super pedantic and following the guide, I would say it's not a daily stand-up, it's a daily Scrum, right?
Oh, thank you very much.
so there's, those are kind of like the words matter, but from my experience, almost no one is doing Scrum Guide to the T.
Yeah.
And you create a barrier, right? When you become what I like to call the Scrum Police, when you're more worried about telling people what they're doing wrong than helping them get to where they need to go. That's like the negative purism to me.
Okay. And I'm definitely on. I don't call it the Scrum Police. I call them Scrum Poindexters, No, absolutely. Right. Like, and we're on the same page on that. It's helping people to move along on their journey and develop capabilities. And, if they want to call it stand up, if they want to call it daily Scrum, you know, I had a mentor of mine used to say this all the time, not all the time, but, frequently, we would be in a room with, you know, a bunch of clients and they would be arguing with one another. And I remember the first time I saw him say this, but there was a lot of tension happening. And somebody finally looked over at him and said, well, what should we do? And he goes, well, I come from the Church of Right Now. And the Church of Right Now says we're not collaborating and communicating effectively. Right. And so like, I like to think that we come from the Church of Right Now. And the Church of Right Now says that there's some things that we're doing really well. And there's some things that we're not doing so well. And there's some things that we can do differently. But we are here in the church together of right now, right? In the cathedral of the church mm-hmm. of right now. And as long as we can have conversations about, you know, what's working well, what's not working so well, and what can we do differently, that's my point of purity, mm-hmm. right? That's my point of purity. That's the one thing that I will, you know, put my fist down and say that one attribute can never be erased, right? We can go back to waterfall if we want to, but we definitely need these moments of clarity where we can talk about what's not working well, what is working well, and what can we do differently, or whatever soup du jour, retro kind of tool you want to use. But that's definitely my one point of purity. Do you have a specific point of purity for you that you won't go past?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know if I do have one. I definitely did when I was younger. I think for me, like the biggest thing for me is if somebody's being like hurt physically, mentally, right? If we're in an abusive situation, I draw the line there. I would say like first and foremost, it's not necessarily agile. But the thing that I guess I've kind of learned is we think about being able to influence people and have communications with people and help people in different journeys and starting locations. As soon as you draw that line and you're like, nope, I'm not going to talk to you anymore, or we can't move forward unless you do A, B, or C, you're potentially closing that door forever. And so I like to look at it as, okay, they're not ready for that yet. And even if, you know, channeling my Deming or my Gold Rat, that's the number one bottleneck, it's not the number one bottleneck if the number one bottleneck is their readiness to do that.
Well, we talked about this the other day, is that, you know, sometimes you get put onto an engagement thinking that you're going to be able to, you know, teach certain, you know, courses, lessons, certifications, or whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get moving, right? And then you get on board and you realize that's not necessarily the case. We're still not, you know, people aren't ready. They're not in a learning mindset yet, right?
Right.
And so as coaches, we've got to meet our clients to where they are, not to where we want them to be.
Yes.
You know? But the other thing I want to call out is what you were talking about earlier, right? Is, you know, if there's like bullying, or I forget the words you used exactly, but you're talking about a respect for people and culture, mm-hmm. right? Psychological safety,
correct.
Right? And so, you know, that might be a sticking point for you. And I think that's a good one, right? Is to say that's the sticking point.
Definitely. You
know, we're kind of actually, right now we're talking about like, what are the things, I think another way to look at it is, what are the things that you put on your working agreement, right? When you get with a client and you're starting to work with them, like, you know, from a purist perspective, what are the things that you put on the working agreement? And so for me, it's definitely, you know, retrospectives and inspect and adapt, right? And for you, it's psychological safety and respect for people and culture.
I would further say the heart, the body, the essence to me of Agile is it's about learning. And if you're not willing to learn, then you're not trying to apply agility. And then it's probably a waste of my time to be there.
Well, so let's get back to also what you said earlier about, well, let's just not call it Scrum. You know, we could do that, but let's not call it Scrum.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you feel that either like helps to move the needle forward, or how do you feel it prevents the needle from being moved forward? We started mm-hmm. off talking, we wanted to talk about a podcast where, you know, how does being a purist either help or hinder, right, the process? And so the statement of, let's do that, but let's not call it Scrum. Like, where do you feel that sits?
I'm honestly really torn on it. Because there's multiple reasons. One, nobody likes being told they're not doing something right. So you meet someone for the first time, or you're interacting with them, like I did to you, right? Oh, we have a daily stand-up. And I'm like, what's a stand-up, right? Like, we only do scrums. You're not doing scrum if you don't call it the daily scrum. Like, that turns people off. And as I mentioned earlier, nobody's doing scrum to the T. So it's really, you know, where are they at in their journey to adopting scrum? However, the flip side is you hear so many organizations that are like, oh, I tried Agile and it didn't work. And we know that 80-some% of organizations that are trying Agile are trying a form of Scrum, either Scrum in its entirety or Scrum with additional frameworks or methodologies tied into it. And so I do see the value in saying, you know, well, you're not going to get all the benefits if you're not doing all these things.
No, and I agree with that. But I don't know that I would actually take it to the step to say like, hey, so if we're not going to do all these things, let's not call it the thing. Right. Mm-hmm. But I also wouldn't, I would call that out in conversation, right? So like for me, if a team wasn't doing a daily scrum in the way that the scrum guide prescribes, try to say that, you know, I would definitely call attention to say, you know, politely that, you know, this is how the scrum guide suggests that a daily scrum be held. This is what we're doing, right? And then I would switch into the coaching hat mode, right? How do you feel that doing it this way might impact our team, right?
Right.
Because I like to coach, right? I realized that, you know, years ago, I liked to tell, you know, and that telling made me the agile Poindexter that I feel like, you know, nobody likes. And so, you know, I would ask them, you know, what their fears are if we tried to do it this way. What do you think might go wrong, right? How likely, you know, is it that that will happen? What could we do to reduce the risk of that happening, you know, so that we could try it, right? How willing would you be to try it? So, you know, I'm not a fan of the idea of saying, well, you guys are not allowed to call it this unless you do it exactly like this. But, you know, at the same time, I'm definitely not that coach who's just going to be like, all right, well, they're doing some of it right. And so I'm just going to leave them alone and, you know, we'll get through it. We'll grow a little bit over time, you know? But I don't want it to be the hill that I'm going to die on, you know, because I know that what I have as a coach, that my value as a coach is really valuable, right? And if I die on hills, then that value goes away.
Right.
And, you know, so how does that sit with you? I know I just said a lot.
I think we're aligned for the most part. Yeah, with everything you said. I like to think of it, and this is something that we've started doing internally at my company more and more, is we take more of a discovery approach to coaching. And it's really, what are the problems you have today and how can I solve them and or help you to solve them, I should say, right? I'm not just doing the work for them. I'm not coming up with everything. But, you know, you work with different organizations. Some of them are more strict on, well, we want to implement Scrum or Nexus or Safe. And so you might work within those constraints. But once again, what I mentioned earlier is doing things for the sake of doing them isn't valuable. So if you're working with people and they're running into a problem that a part of the Scrum guide is meant to address, to me, that's the opportunity to have that conversation, to say, well, the Scrum guide suggests to solve that problem with this. Would you guys like to try that?
Well, you know, and to me, I've thought about it a bunch, right? My hypothesis, and I don't know if there's any truth to this, but that like the reason why words have so much meaning is, you know, from a branding perspective, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and we don't want people to maybe leave that organization and think that they were running a daily scrum, you know, and then start a daily scrum at their next organization and, you know, and think that they're running a daily scrum and that they're not, you know? And I definitely get it from that perspective, but for me, it's more about ensuring that the opportunity to coach, the opportunity to learn, right? The opportunity to you know, keep meeting the client where they are. That's really what I look at as a coach, you know.
Yeah.
But what I don't like is when a client says to me, you know, Drew, we can't do the daily scrum like that, or we can't have everybody in backlog refinement, right? And you're being a purist to say that, you know, because once they pull out and drop that purist card, you know, it's like going nuclear, right? Like there's, you know, now we've stripped this engagement, this transformation all the way down to the studs, and I've got to work on building it back up again so that, you know, we can keep moving forward. It's a wild card that should be removed from the deck, right?
That's interesting. Maybe that's the thing to unpack. Like, is it like you feel like once they call you a purist, is it that like now you have this reputation that maybe you're not reasonable or practical?
Well, I feel like it's the one thing that when clients have called me purists in the past to say that, you know, we can't do that. You're being too much of a purist, Drew. Right. It's just that like, let me ask you, right? Like, so have you ever experienced that before or is this something that's like new to you?
No, it's definitely not new to me. Not always in those words, you're being a purist for sure. Or you're being too rigid or, you know, I think the thing that we see a lot, and it's, I don't know, I'm being rambly here, but we always say Agile is different in every organization. And so is culture, right? You can't just buy Nerf guns and foosball tables and boom, you're Agile. But on the same note, a lot of the challenges and the things that companies go through and the problems they have are the same. And they all think that their problem is unique and that this thing is just not going to work for them. Right. And I think that's more of what we see in these instances where, you know, they're like, oh, that's just not reasonable or that's not going to work. And it is hard. It's hard to get that credibility, I feel like, to get them to try that. And that's why I usually take the other approach of, okay, well, it's on the table. You know, we'll come back to it. Or, you know, I'll repeatedly point out when you're having problems because you're not doing this. But what are the things then to you that are the problem? And let's come up with solutions for that.
Yeah. And, you know, getting back to like the working agreement thing, right? That's early in my engagements. I put that on the table on, you know, to say to my clients, right? If there's ever points where you're feeling like, you know, Drew's being puritanical, we can't work like this, right? The better way to say it is, you know, this is why I don't think we can do this, right? But here's what we could try, right? Or let's explore why you don't think it'll work here. Right. And let's explore ways of potentially adapting it a little bit so it can work. Right. So we can, maybe we don't have to do everything exactly, but maybe there's parts of it that we can do. Right.
Yeah.
Which is why, like when you brought up the idea, well, then we can't call it a daily scrum. Right. Like if team says to me, well, we can't have all the developers on it. Right. We can only have the lead developers on it. You know, I'm not going to not allow them to call it a daily scrum, right? I'm still going to allow them to call it a daily scrum, but I'll just, you know, talk to them a bit about why, you know, what aspects are missing, you know, from the scenario that would really allow it to be a true daily scrum so that they can get the full benefits out of it. So,
yeah, it's interesting. You know, when we talk about the psychology of words matter, it's that if you call it the same thing always, like you don't change the name for it, you're going to fall into the same habits. So you think of like a status report or a status meeting. Those tend to be relatively common in a more tollgate type organization. They may have even daily ones. That's pretty uncommon from my experience, but they might. And if you try to implement something like a daily scrum, but you're still calling it the status meeting, are you going to get different behaviors out of it?
That I'm fully on board with, right? Like, you know, and absolutely, right? Like people show up to a daily status meeting and they're checked out. They're, you know, they're only paying attention to when they need to pay attention. Data usually flows upstream and not specifically downstream. You're absolutely right. And so within, on that side of the coin, I'm definitely a bit more of a stickler. Although I have had instances where clients wouldn't let me use any other word than meeting, right? So I wasn't allowed to say the word ceremony, or I wasn't allowed to say the word agile event, right? We could call it team backlog refinement, but it had to be called the team backlog refinement meeting, you know? And that's not a hill that I'm specifically willing to die on, right?
Right.
But a status meeting, right? Those are the meetings I want to get rid of. Those are the ones that I want to help to shift the needs to elsewhere, right? By empowering the other quote unquote meetings, right, to be more valuable. Because what I look at with my clients is not specifically the words that they're using,
mm-hmm.
right, but the actual behaviors that they are exuding within each of those events or meeting of the minds. I'm trying to come up with a neutral word for people coming together to exchange information. You know, but like, that's really what it is. It's a meeting where people are coming together to either exchange information or to collaborate, to refine information. And if they're doing that well in the right time box at the right point within the sprint, then I don't care if they want to call it like a, you know, Boy Scout Den Mothers, you know, jamboree or whatever it is, you know, as long as they all know what their roles and responsibilities are and they're collaborating and communicating effectively, I'm not the kind of coach who's going to die on the hill of, and we also have to call it this. So,
yeah. So kind of going back to my comment where we wouldn't let a daily scrum still be called a status meeting typically, right? That's not something we desire. But then we have the inverse. We're calling it the daily scrum, but we're still treating it the exact same as a status meeting, right? And so at that point, is it good to differentiate that?
Yeah. You know, I don't see that a whole lot. Like, I don't dispute that you've seen that a lot, because I definitely feel like that's an anti-pattern that's out there. I just think with the clients that I've worked for in the past, my challenge has always been to get them to leverage sprint planning and backlog refinement to a higher degree, right? Getting the wrong people out of the room for the daily scrum, getting the right people in the room for the daily scrum, time boxing it in the right way. And, you know, that to me hasn't been the problem. That to me is one that, you know, if it isn't running in the right way, it's kind of been easy to course correct that. It's the other ceremonies. And then specifically, like, you know, given my safe background, and I do a lot more coaching at the program level than I do at the team level these days. You know, it's coaching senior leadership, you know, in what their responsibilities are to the product backlog and the roadmap and the product vision and OKRs and mm-hmm. things like that, you know.
Yeah, it is an interesting idea or topic. You know, I see both sides, I guess, is where I'm stuck on. You know, I've seen companies, consulting companies, dev shops are like, oh, we don't do Scrum because we don't write user stories. User stories aren't in the Scrum guide, right? Like, and there's other various bullet points that they make. And so I definitely get, you know, the stand up. A lot of people, when we were in person, stood up for their daily Scrum. Right, that's a practice from XP. It's definitely beneficial. There's no reason you can't do it. You don't have to do it. Right? And those kind of like call outs and those little things, I think, you know, is misinformation. And the question is it dangerous misinformation?
Well, okay, so I'm going to be really transparent here in a very personal way and tell you a quick story. 2 weeks ago, I did an interview with a really great agile consulting firm. And it's the first time, probably maybe even ever, where they quizzed me on the Scrum guide. And I realized, like, oh, shoot, I don't know the answers in the way that the Scrum guide specifically wants me to answer them with the right words. And so I have on my backlog for over there on my Kanban board, you know, for the next, like, 2 weeks to read through the Scrum guide again. I'm actually going to go and do, I've done my CSM, I've done my advanced CSM, I've done my CSP, I've never done my PSM. And so that's on my bucket list too. And the reason why I bring it up is for two reasons. One, I love that you corrected me, right? I love that you corrected me when I said daily stand up and not daily Scrum, right? Because that's another reminder, right? Like, that I need to get back to Scrum, right? I definitely am not out of touch with Agile. I answered all of the Agile questions like with tremendous ease. It flowed like water coming down a beautiful Spanish fountain. I was in Spain 2 weeks ago, you know, and then the questions about SAFe again, right? Mm-hmm. But so definitely I am giving you permission and I am asking you when you hear me, you know, because it's apparent that you know the Scrum Guide better than I do. Please call me out on it because I it's part of my set of capabilities, right, that I am looking to extend and develop and improve, you know, over the next month. And then also for any of the listeners out there, right, like if there are things that I'm saying that don't fall in line with the Scrum Guide and Brad doesn't catch them, right, please call me out on that. And I know in the last episode we said we were going to have a email address ready. And we don't. Do you happen to have a throwaway email address that you want to throw out there on this podcast, Brad? Or
I mean, I don't know about throwaway. I have my Bradgill email, hello@bradgill.com, which is
okay.
Maybe harder to spell out via the pun, but
do you want that on the? Do you want the world knowing your
that's email fine. Address? I put that. That's the one I put out there.
Okay, so then I think I should make one for myself too. And I'm just going to say that by the end of the day today, hello at agilecoaching.nyc will be up and running. And then I think also at the end of the day today, hello@agileforagilists.com will also be up and running. So if there's anything you've heard on this podcast that you disagree with or that you agree with or an extension, the things that we've said, please call us out on it because it wouldn't be agile if we weren't, you know, looking to improve our own agility and knowledge of Scrum and Kanban and so on and so forth. So
definitely.
So we're at the 32-minute mark right now. There's one area that we really didn't delve into too deep, which is the infighting aspect of mm-hmm. of being an agile purist. And I really think we should talk about that for at least a couple of minutes.
Agreed.
We started to talk about it, but I feel like we kept on veering away from that.
We're tangential.
Shiny
objects. You know,
I want to throw out there, for me, it breaks my heart whenever I'm on these calls where agilists are fighting to say that my version of whatever is the right one and yours is the wrong one. Mm-hmm. That to me is in and of itself not agile. Right. And I think, you know, with the passion that we have, that you and I definitely both have, and that I think it's fair to say that the reason why most agilists are in this game is that same level of passion mm-hmm. as well. Like if our passion is to make the world a better place to live in incrementally, one sprint after the other through the various organizations that we coach at, right, then to spend time slinging mud at each other for why we feel each other's form of agile is not agile, I think is that's what breaks my heart the most. So,
In bringing back the, you know, is it a daily stand up? Is it a daily Scrum conversation? I've been in rooms where people are arguing, right, about these sorts of things and making a big deal. Or I've seen people walk away from a conversation and just dismiss that person because they used the wrong word. And one of the, I think, really eye-opening things for me, I mean, I've always been against that, but the really eye-opening things for me is the last revision of the Scrum Guide. They cut so much out of it, including things that people were fighting about. And it kind of makes you pause and think, you know, maybe we shouldn't be taking ourselves so seriously, guys.
That's that last part. Absolutely agree. Right. Like so fun fact about me, it was 2 years ago. I realized that, you know, I was, you know, now it's funny I'm saying this, but like, you know, I was knowledgeable of Scrum. I was knowledgeable of Kanban and SAFe and, knowledgeable about silencing my phone. Here we go. And then I just added the word coach as a suffix to my title, right? So I wound up enrolling in an ICF, International Coaching Federation, accredited coach's course, right? The one I chose was one called IPEC, which is the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching. And they focus on what's called core energy coaching, right? The basic premise of it is that everybody, right, throughout our lives, how we think and how we feel about something or ourselves will either result in action or inaction or some level in between, right? And that we are held back often in our lives by limiting beliefs and interpretations and assumptions and something we call gremlins. And I wanted to do that course because I realized that, like, I didn't really know the first thing about what it meant to be a coach, mm-hmm. right? Like the nuts and bolts of, and I chose one that was completely agnostic to software technology. You know, I've since also taken some of the coaching courses with Damon Poole through the IC Agile training track. You know, to me, it's really important that we look at what it means to be a coach, right? And that we recognize that everybody's journey is unique. Every organization's journey is unique, and that we meet our clients, you know, where they are, and that we have a respect for one another's, you know, excellence and their ideas and what they bring to the table. And, you know, they did get a little hippy dippy and shaking the tambourine in this energy training course, but, you know, to a degree, like there's no separation between us, right? Like I am you and you are me, and we're in this together, and we should want the best outcome, right? So that's what breaks my heart the most as an agilist is when there is that level of infighting, and, you know, we need to be right, you know? I hope that I have demonstrated, you know, that in my ability to put myself out there and say, hey, I didn't get a job probably a couple of weeks back because I need to brush up my skills on the Scrum Guide. And I am opening myself up to, you know, you, Brad, and other audience members to help me along that journey, because I am so passionate about this and, you know, really want the best for my clients and the world, you know?
Definitely. Yeah. I was in a call with an interview of Jeff Sutherland the other day. And he was talking about an organization he helped go from SAFe to Scrum at Scale. And speaking of, I guess, a group of agilists that tend to get the brunt of the purist conversations these days, it is SAFe. And one of the things that he mentioned that I really appreciated is he was like, you know, SAFe is light years ahead of where they were at pre-SAFe. Right? Like SAFe is so much more beneficial than the traditional, what we'll call waterfall approach. He wasn't saying it wasn't, but then he's a salesman, so he's selling his Scrum at Scale, but his message was that, you know, Scrum at Scale just kind of brought them the extra mile for their situation. And yeah, I wish we could shift the conversation more that way. Like all of these are better than the alternative.
That's exactly it, right? Like we're all agilists. We all get to be coaches and we all get to play in the sandbox of software and technology. You know, I always say that agile coaches and scrum masters are therapists for technology organizations. You know, like we're not the Poindexters who are like, oh, well, the Scrum Guide says this and this is how many people should be in the room. And, you know, like we do that sometimes, but the real value that we have is asking the powerful questions and helping people to change and reframe their thoughts and their feelings around, you know, why they're afraid that adopting this type of way of working might not work so well in this organization, and helping them to, you know, create little intelligently designed failure experiments to try, you know, being more agile, to try Scrum. And I love that, you know, like it's, you know, I definitely see there are some very well-known shortcomings to SAFe that I agree with, you know. I think that I'm a great SPC, but, you know, the only reason why I'm a great SPC is because I had the right amount of money in my pocket to take my SPC. That's not the only reason, but, you know, I had but like certainly anybody who has that money can go and take the SBC. And I've seen instances where people who were, had never been project managers, never been scrum masters, never even worked in a technical organization before, but worked in the corporate training department, and were just professional trainers. And that's an amazing skill set to have, you know? And I've seen them become SBCs. And when they do their training, they're just, you know, reading material. They're great trainers, you know, but it's the anecdotes that are missing. And the other thing I always say to people who I come across and coach and whatnot is when you're choosing training, right, what you're buying isn't specifically the certification or the methodology. You're buying the anecdotal stories that your trainer is providing to you that are helping to demonstrate how this process, this methodology, the structure, whatever it is, you know, worked well or didn't work well. You know, that's really what you're buying, is you're buying your trainer stories. And so it's really important when you're choosing a certification course that you're not just looking for something that's low cost, right? But that you get on LinkedIn and look at who your trainer is, right? So
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess my last point or word of advice in this area, I think, is something that you realize as a senior in any industry, any role. And it's that there are constraints to every situation. And if you're, as you become more experienced at doing something, you're able to work within those constraints and create the best possible situation at the time within those constraints. And so when you're looking at someone else's implementation of Agile or their way of working or their process, there are likely constraints and reasons for them doing it that way that you are not aware of.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, along those same lines, and then we should probably wrap it up, but this is your day off today. You're supposed to be out having fun.
I know, right? This
is fun. I know. I said the same thing. If I could only do this 48 hours a day. You know, it used to be that if our coaching engagement ended, I took that personally. Like, what did I do wrong that we didn't get the contract extended? But you know, the other side of the coin is that there's some other coach who was there before me who didn't get their contract extended, right? There's lots of agilists that come and go on any organization's journey for transformation. And that's really the beauty of it, is they get lots of different, you know, perspectives and different flavors of coaching. And then hopefully, you know, the coach comes along and helps them to then distill and decide, all right, you've tried this, you've tried that, you know, this coach was this and this coach was that, and, you know, this consulting firm and that consulting firm, you know, you've had enough trips around the sun here. What do you think will work? Right. Mm-hmm. If you're really good at saying what won't work, but what do you think will work? You know? So, yeah. Well, I think, you know, we've almost at 45 minutes now, and, I think that was a good one.
Yeah.
So we'd love to hear feedback. You know, how is being called a purist affected you? What are your beliefs as far as like the Scrum Guide, you know, purism? What are your beliefs around like the way we call our Agile events? Brad and I think we're I don't even want to say we're on the opposite sides of the same coin. You know, I think we're maybe the ridges around a coin. you know, we'd love to get your thoughts. We'd love to get your criticism. We'd love to get your feedback. And I would love for you to tell me areas where I need to learn more about the Scrum Guide. So
definitely.
Brad, thank you. Thank you, Brad.
Hey, thank you, Drew. And likewise, I'm always open for feedback, right? That is Agile in my mind, is frequent feedback.
Well, I love your new backdrop. Love the new backdrop.
Thank you.
Brad's former backdrop, I mentioned the other day, it was this grid of foam soundproofing tiles, and it looked a little bit like he was in the bathroom.
It did.
In a shower. And now we've got this beautiful, like, it looks like a one of those oil-dipped books, you know? It's really cool. Thanks. Anyhow.
Thank you.
Thanks again, and we'll definitely get another one out for recording soon.